I've seen a lot of change, been through a lot of pain. Some things are not the same as they were a year ago, but all will be okay. I move on each and every day. The past is where it stays, way back a year ago.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Wake and Make podcast. I'm super stoked. I have one of my favorite artist creators as a guest this week. I say that about every single guest because it's true. I handpick the guests to bring on because I'm a fan of them, and I think that you're a fan of them as well. So our guest this week is Roman Rusinov. Oh, God, I knew I was going to mess it up. How do you say your last name again?
It's Rusinov.
Rusinov.
Yep, like Smirnov and all that other stuff.
That's right. Yeah. Awesome. And you are the founder, the owner, and the operator of God, we went over this right before.
It's Ikari.
Ikari, right. Yep. And... what is it? Sap and Bark as well, right?
Oh, you got that one right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That one's not foreign to me. That's awesome. Do you mind introducing yourself? Just kind of bringing the audience up to speed with who you are, where you're from, where you're at, the cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, like Dennis said, my name is Roman, and right now I reside in mountains of North Carolina in a little town called Brevard. That's in the United States, if there's anyone else out there. What else? I'm a designer, illustrator, maker, and probably a million other things, but you know, I make stuff. I guess that's a pretty good explanation nowadays. It doesn't matter what it is. I try to, you know, get my hands dirty, whatever I can.
That is so awesome. You know, in preparation of this episode, I did a little bit of reading up on you, and I read that you grew up in Siberia, Russia, and you were a big fan of fishing with your dad, and you even built a boat with him. Is that true?
Yeah. I think I wasn't that young, but I was young. Like, I was five or so, and we built this... you know, just a rowing boat out of a bunch of wood and screws and a bunch of tar. It was pretty awesome. Yeah. It's a one cool experience. So like, and it like obviously took not a day. We just built it over, I think, a month or so, and used it for a long time since.
Yeah. That is so cool. Is your, is your family still in Russia, or are they in the States with you?
Nope. They're still there.
They're still there. How was it growing up in Siberia? That's a faraway land for us here.
Yeah, it's. I mean, if you go there, you'll probably think it's a very desolate place, you know. But it's a small town, kind of stuck in post-Soviet times. Like, there's, you know, there's European part of the countries where like. A little more up to date, but once the deeper you go, the more back in time you will get, basically. So I don't know. It's different. That's all I can probably say.
Yeah, it's cold, huh?
Yeah. And funny story. Like was it 2006 when I made a leap. I went from Siberia to Florida, out of all places.
Talk about a dramatic change.
Yeah, so it's it's not like going, you know, it's completely different. Like it's as different as they can probably get from cultural wise to, you know, weather and all that other stuff. So it was interesting.
What took you from Siberia to Florida? Were you following a loved one, or were you going to school, or?
No, that was actually opposite of that. I'm following a loved one.
Oh. In a way. Sometimes that's even better.
Yeah. But it wasn't bad or anything. What I'm trying to say was kind of, I graduated from university, and I was I was down with art school. And I don't know, it was just, I knew some people that were participating in those, like, call them work and travel programs back then, like when it's basically very low paid labor that companies hire out during, you know, peak seasons. So, because no one else wants to work. So, you know, people from elsewhere come, do the work and leave. But for the people, I was one of those people. the funny story was, like, you go like to tour agency and, you know, like, yep, I want to go and whatever. And they give you, like, you don't get to choose anything. They just like, well, you're going to go to, I believe I was assigned to go somewhere. It wasn't the Colorado Springs. It was a tiny little, it wasn't even in town. It was like one of those, like, I guess, gas station pull-offs somewhere middle of nowhere. And there was like a McDonald's there. So my job offer for that program was that little McDonald's that I was supposed to go to and work for 3 months and live in a hotel basically next door. No, not a hotel, it's probably like Motel 6 or something like that for and then you get to decide whether you want to work 3 months or 2 or 3 months. If you work 2 months and then you just basically spend all the money that you earned on the third month, or you can work for 3 months and, you know, pocket the money and go home and, you know, maybe rent a BMW for a day.
Yeah, I'm sure that's crazy, man. You worked at a McDonald's. Was that?
No. Okay. So that story goes on.
Oh, okay.
It's probably going to be a 4-hour podcast.
That's fine with me, Roman. I have all the time in the world to hang out with you, brother.
So obviously I was like, well, I mean, anyone in the right state of mind will be, I mean, there were people that were in the right state of mind that they went and worked those places. I was like, there's no way I'm going to fly across the ocean and, like, work in McDonald's. Not that it wasn't prestigious or like the pay was bad or whatever. It was just like, this is not what I wanted to do.
You have more plan for yourself.
I wouldn't call it a plan. It was more of a outlook, maybe. You know, like, I didn't know what it is, but what it could be. And I was like, well, I'm not going to do that. I know that for a fact. So, and I had some friends that went prior years and decided to stay, right? So, and I, like, contacted them. They're like, well, you can come here. We have, you know, we have Disney there. And I was like, oh, Disney. I remember that growing up, you know, cartoons and all that. And I'm like, but that was the park. So, but my idea was like, well, if they have a park, they have animators there, they have, you know, people that draw. I'm like, well, maybe I can go, I don't know, start replicating Mickey Mouse over and over or something like that. Anyway, like that interested me more than, you know, flipping a burger. Not there's wrong with flipping a burger. I wasn't into cooking or anything like that. So my thing at the time was sort of drawing passion, you know, photography, kind of that are my, as I call it, artistic side with, you know, coming out of art school and just liking making art and stuff like that. So that's how I basically ended up there. And I did end up going to Disney and getting a little gig there as a photographer. So I did end up, like, standing in the park and shooting, you know, pictures of people, but, you know, that's still, you know,
it's a foot in the door.
Yeah, it's a foot in the door, and it was somewhat fun. Like, you know, it was really hot. But it, you know, it allowed me to make some money because they only gave me a part-time job, unfortunately, but they had this, like, internal system where you go and, you know, you don't want to work tomorrow, you can put out your shifts. Like, if you don't want to work. So I just, me being part-time, I just went and basically make myself an 80-hour week.
You just took everyone else's shifts.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically took everything that was available. And I, you know, wake up at 5 in the morning, take a bus there and basically go out of there, like, with the last firework. So that allowed me, like, to make some pretty quick money fairly easy, you know, to just like save up on like a little laptop. So I bought like a little laptop so I can do stuff, you know, doing some of the design things. And it's just kind of snowball from there, you know, one thing after another. But that was like a funny beginning. Yeah, that was just like a funny little beginning that like I didn't really imagine for myself. I didn't know how it's going to go. I mean, there were some, you know, hurdles along the way, but it was cool to just come into, you know, different country with like, I think I had like a $500 and pair of underwear in a backpack. That's about it. So
that's so cool, Roman. I love those kinds of stories. It sounds like a success story, and it's that to me those are so that's so inspiring. When you were growing up, were your parents and your family members and your community very supportive of you being an artist and you investing into the art world?
Yeah, generally, I think I'd never come across that something would say like, oh, maybe you shouldn't draw and go into, you know, learn how to, I don't know, make engines or something like that, which would have been probably fine, you know. I would probably end up designing engines now.
Yeah, if that's what you wanted to do.
Yeah, but overall, like, I grew up with like some of my neighbors were, you know, really good at drawing, so we'd always get together and draw or make this crazy dioramas with like, you know, little cars, and we'll just build the cities out of paper, sometimes it will be plasticine or, you know, things like that. So we're always making stuff as kids, because not that, I mean, yes, the toys were not super abundant, so we just liked stuff as that we made, you know, like there were no, we didn't have access to Legos or, you know, anything like advanced like that. So we were just try to make our own toys, basically. And a buddy of mine, he's, I don't know, maybe 5 years older than me, he was going to art school at the time. And I was always fascinated. I'm like, oh, art school is so cool, you know. I like to draw and whatever. And he's like, well, why don't you come and try it out? But he was already in, I don't know, third or fourth grade in that art school. But his teacher was cool. He was like, oh, yeah, just come in, you know, like, no, nothing. Just like, yeah, come sit in a few classes and see how you do, you know, see if you're good, you know, if you're good, you might just stay here. And I like, I know, I was like, cool. So I started going, and they were like doing pretty advanced stuff for that time. And for me, for sure, like there was like a design oriented class. So they were, I remember they were painting, you basically have to paint a gradient with like a little, you cut off a little squares, and they just give you like, here's the red, here's the blue, make like the smoothest gradient. And you have to paint every single square like super even, and like each step has to be, you know, you have to mix the right amount of color, and you have to do like for like a lot of colors, basically. So that was, and I tried it, you know, I did my best and I succeeded. And at some point there, he was like, well, you're doing well, but why don't you just, you know, go in and start from the beginning, you know, and see how you do. And I was like, sounds great. So
there you were. And that was that back, yeah, when you were in Russia, or was that when?
Yeah. Yeah. That was back in, yeah, that was back then.
That is, that's cool. I remember taking art a lot in school. Is the only classes I got good grades in was art. And I remember projects like that and just understanding like color theory, and man, those kind of fundamentals really set you up for whatever kind of art you're going to go down. If you're an artist and you're going that direction, getting those fundamentals in place, I think is so, it's so key to have those. And, you know, that's the side of you that I'm really, really familiar with, is your design stuff. And like I said, I'm a big fan. And prepping for this episode, I realized that you not only do you do that, but you do a lot of like more mechanical design stuff with the, what is it called? The bike packing community. And you're an avid like outdoorsman, and you like biking and camping and fishing and all of those things. And that's where I kind of dove into the products that you're making. And it's so cool. Like, I'm not a fisherman. Like, that's just something that doesn't interest me, but I'm a fan of your work and seeing that translate from like design, in the sense that I look at design with your artwork, to the design that's mechanical in these like fly fishing, like tackle boxes, and the mechanics of how you make brackets and like holders for your bike for long distance kind of biking and stuff like that. To me, that's so cool. It's like, now I'm a double fan of yours and the work that you're making. Can you describe a little bit more of that side of your business and your kind of philosophy with the outdoors stuff and your passion for that side of what you do?
Well, first of all, thank you for being a fan.
Of course, man. Your stuff is rad.
Thanks. You know, like it's actually a great segue from, you know, from the art school type of things, because I always, and I did design for a long time. Like, that was my main profession, I guess, right? Like, I was doing graphic design, you know, developing brands, but then switching it to like web design, then doing like design for apps, you know, user experience. I've dove in into like, you know, architecture of the things, you know, how the enterprise app work and how it's, you know, I got like almost as close to engineering as it gets, right? Like, before like actual writing code. And I, you know, I've learned some of that too for web work, but I always had this overhanging aspiration, I guess, that like I wanted to create some physical products, right? Like, that was my always kind of not an end goal, but like I always wanted to try it, but I didn't know how to, you know, where do I start? Like, what's the product, you know? But then it turned out like a product just kind of found itself. It was just something like I got interested in, you know, like I was always into riding mountain bikes, but then I was like, well, I always ride these trails and there's like rivers, and I was like, well, why not try to, you know, maybe there's fish in there. Maybe I'll, you know, bring a little rod with me. And it's slowly start getting into this Japanese method of fishing called Tenkara. It's basically like, you know, almost as your traditional fly fishing, but you have a telescopic rod that doesn't have any reel on it. So it's like ultra compact. You can just throw it in your backpack or like attach it to your bike and just go, and kind of, it becomes an additive activity, or, you know, just breaks things up. Or like if you go hike and you come across a stream, whatever, like it just, I only do it for fun. Like, I don't rarely keep any of that fish. Like, I'm more of a, on the sport kind of side of fish. Like, farm fish is farm fish. Like, let the wild guys live. I mean, you give them a little piercing, but that's okay. So, and basically, like, I started doing it, like, well, and there was a need for me. I was like, oh, like, I wanted like a little spool that can hold the flies in it, and you can wind your line, you know, while you're not using it. So I was like, well, I'll try to make it something. And I just found a piece of, I think it was like a piece of oak that I had in the garage, made a super sketchy tabletop jig to turn the piece to you. It basically, I wanted to make a puck, right? Well, not just a puck. I wanted to make a hollow puck with like a little, you know, it has to, the sides of it have to hold a line. So there's a little like, so it turns out it's not super easy to make on the table. So, but I think I got the shape and I got most of the stuff done, and like used the router to kind of eat out the inside of it and glue some magnets in there. And that was, I should have, I have a, like an original version in the garage. I'll show you after we're done with this. So like I made the first version like that, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool, you know, just as a prototype. I mean, it was a very elaborate prototype. I don't know why I make it out of oak.
Like, proof of concept, right? Just to see if your idea can be made.
Yeah, but again, it's when you start making stuff like that, it doesn't really matter what you like. You can totally overdo it. You make it out of like completely wrong material, but that's okay. Because from there, you'll be like, oh well, this was too fucking hard. Like this is like there is no way this is gonna be, you know, reproducible at any point. But that was a learning lesson, right? And then your mind goes into like completely different state, trying to like simplify the process, like what can be improved. Like maybe, you know, like in my case, I just completely scrapped that idea and went, you know, the layer route versus like subtraction route, like add the, you know, build the thing with layers. Basically, like you can call it a additive manufacturing, but it's not really, it's like a combination of CNC and that, because I would laser out the part, but then I would layer the part on each other. So that's how I came up with that concept. And you know, from the need that I had, I basically developed this idea and posted a couple pictures and people were interested. And I was like, oh well, maybe this is it. You know, why? If there's a little bite, you know, like try to
like fishing, man. It's like fishing, and it's so interesting because I find the little projects that I do, those, and I just post them because I get a lot of like a lot of relief and a lot of like what helps my burnout is making products for myself and testing new theories and doing proofs of concepts and all of those kinds of things. And it's always the ones that I do for myself that I don't plan to make and put into production are the ones that people like the most. And I end up making those. And it's like the projects that you end up finding are the most successful are the ones that you didn't anticipate being the most successful. And that's what makes it so cool, because you could wrap your head around what you think is going to be great sellers, or you know, this like your mind says like, oh, what's gonna make money, what are people gonna like, and it flops. And then the ones that you're just like, oh man, I just make a, you know, right now I'm working on a pair of sandals and I'm like, oh, I'll just make a pair of sandals for myself. And then because you're doing it, you want to take photos and put it on your Instagram story or like show some people. And then they're like, oh, that's what we like, can you make me a pair of those? And I'm like, wasn't planning on it. I don't even have them finished. Like the prototype isn't even done, but okay, let's try it out. Now I'm adding it to my catalog.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's how it basically was born, exactly. Yeah. From that scenario. And one thing after another, you know, you end up with like 8 different iterations of it and like 4 other models. And, you know, then I start to, again, continuing that food of thought of like making stuff, and I'm like, oh, look, I want to attach the rod, you know, to the bike frame. I couldn't find anything. Like, so I went and found like a little a bracket that holds a pump, and I was like, oh, this sort of works. Like, I like, you know, it could work, but it wasn't like good enough. Or, like, it was too limiting. So that's how I designed one of these, you know. Or is it like one of these bike brackets, basically? Yeah,
3D printed.
This one is actually lasered, and heat and a heat bend. So, and then like again, then from there, it just snowballed and snowballed. And I'm like, well, it's cool that I got to, you know, I learned how to do the laser basically from that whole process too, because it was. You end up finding yourself basically going into this, not a rabbit hole, but basically constant thought of like to iterate, right? Like you always want to improve on something, always thinking of like a different processes that you can incorporate. From there, I was, the laser was a cool learning thing to like to do. And then I bought some cheap, like I think I like paid $500 for it or something, like a Chinese K40 from a guy online, you know. Another one of those deals. But he was cool. He was actually from one of those like a maker labs. So they had a bunch of those lasers that they already modified it enough to be usable, like a lot of custom software and like bunch of electronics changed. So I was like, I basically got this thing that like ton of wires that were already changed, like dials, and I was like, what the hell this thing is like, and there's no instruction, you know, you just bought it from eBay and it was like, comes with the, you know, like a construction bucket with a pump in it. So assembler required. But then that was a cool process too, because like I, instead of, you know, going buying a Glowforge and just pressing a button, I learned how the actual technology works, you know. I understand what's going on inside. Like I know, I mean, you'll find yourself browsing a lot of forums anyway, but at least you have an understanding to like in some problem solving, you know, with your tools, right? Like if something doesn't work or like something gets out of focus, like how do you fix it? Or something like doesn't, you know, burn exactly right. Like you, instead of going and calling support or whatever, like you, that ability to kind of fix your own tools is pretty cool too, and I'm always fascinated with that too.
You either enjoy that aspect or you don't enjoy that aspect, and I think that there's unique people for each one. I wanted to kind of go back really quickly where you were talking about that bracket that you made and how you said, you know, with the products that you're making right now, that every time that you're making them, you're constantly improving it and you're changing things little by little. And I notice that as a maker myself, making, you know, handmade goods, is that every project that I work on, there's a little bit, like every single one, there's something a little bit different from the other one. And to me, I think that that's a blessing and a curse, because you're always pushing yourself. And you're always improving, but at the same time, the curse is sometimes things aren't always perfectly uniform. You know what I mean? And you know what I've encountered is people that bought my products when I had first started, and this goes back to when I was tattooing. When you first start, people are really happy about the products that you make, but as you improve, people almost think like they're being gypped because they bought the first rendition of what you made and now you've improved, and they're like, hey, what about like so much better now? Why don't I get one of those? And you're like, that's not how it works, dude.
I feel like it's, you know, in the maker community, that should be like anytime someone, you know, trying to buy something from a maker, there should be like this disclosure form that they need to sign that they, you know, that these kind of things just expected. Like that's how that, you know, you're dealing with the maker, that's going to be basically 90% of the time. Like if you want something that doesn't change, like you, I mean, I don't even know what you buy. And you buy Apple right now, you know, it's the same thing. It's like, it doesn't really matter. Like any company that like, it's actually like, I don't know, people view it, I think, as a negative, but I think it's like it's a big positive, because it's, why would you want someone to stop, you know? Like I'm always excited when I see new versions of things that come out, you know? I mean, sometimes it's a little bit excessive and gets expensive, but at the same time, it's, you know, that's, this is the only way to move forward. You can't make a product that's just like, you're not going to change for 100 years. Like that's not how it works. But so you have to like, yeah, I mean, you have to pace yourself, obviously. You can, you know, if you're going to start changing something every day, then that might be too much. Like, but collect enough, you know, to you know, have a version or like a significant change. Or in my case, like when I start making these things, like I just make changes basically as I go. There might be small changes. Like I'm not going to announce the tiny little tweak, you know, and I glued this layer backwards this time to see what happened. Like I'm not gonna announce any of that, but eventually you're gonna either end up with a completely different product which you can use as a separate product and just keep the product that was before and slowly fizzle it out. So you get into these, you know, crazy like weird scenarios where like you try to figure out like the product line is it's not easy, you know.
No, especially, it's hard. It's really hard.
it's really hard because it's you, especially if you, you know, like you and me, it's just me. Like there's no one, and I don't have someone else that can keep track the inventory and stuff. And then, like, again, it's a blessing in disguise, like you said, because the made to order model is fantastic for iterating, right? Because it's everything you make comes out different, but then, you know, to your point is at what point, you know, you can actually turn on the replicator, right? And you know, that's something I'm kind of dealing with right now, kind of. But at the same time, it kind of depends on your strategy, right? Like, is my strategy was never to make a stock of products that I then have to go and try selling. Like, I don't like that. I mean, sure, at some point this will have to happen, but I don't like that idea. Like, I like making things as they come. And sometimes it gets overwhelming, you know, like you get so many orders and you're like, ah. But at the same time, it's like I sort of enjoy it more this way versus, you know, trying to go to retail shops and, oh, I have 350 of this. Would you buy it? And I'm like, oh, they want all.
That sounds like such a nightmare. And that's the way that I am too. Like when I first started Leathercraft, I was just trying to make like production style stuff. And now that I make such customizable like artwork kind of stuff, I don't even start it until it's ordered and completely paid for. And sometimes I have enough orders, you know, that even the projects that are paid for don't get started for 2, 3, 4, 6 months before it happens. And you're right, it can be stressful when you start getting this like you know, time log that it's going to take for you to get this product to the person. And the person probably knows what to expect, but as the owner and the maker, we put such high expectations on ourselves that we want everything delivered the day before they even order it, you know?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's good if you can surpass basically when you get from, you know, making stuff as it comes, and if you can surpass that, people pay for the orders up front, you know, so you don't get into the stage, surpass the stage as well, where you have to like make the stock and try to sell it, you know. That was just something I wanted to say to previous thing. But yeah, it's an interesting I don't even know. It's a model, and there's not really, no one really teaching it, I don't think, like as a thing, you know. Like there are classes of, you know, like, oh, you can start a small business, you can do that. Like there's things here and there, but no one's gonna like teach you how to, you know, do these little weird like made to order things. And like, you kind of have to figure it out yourself almost, you know, and it's going to be depending on what is it you do.
Well, I think that's interesting that you say that, because every person that I've had on the podcast and all of my friends that I talk to on a regular basis, they all do it a little bit different. So to teach a class that's a perfect for everyone is, you know, kind of outlandish. You know what I mean? For me, I have friends that, they do the design stuff, and then they get all of their products made in mass, and they outsource those things. And that's the complete opposite of me, where I do the design, I make it start to finish one project at a time. And there's nothing to say that one way is the right way or the wrong way. Like,
oh, you can do both. You can do both. Yeah. That's, I'm actually like in the middle of something like that. Like I've developed a product that's like fairly easy to make, and I'm trying to figure out, well, can I manufacture a lot of this myself? Sure, I can give it that try. Like, or maybe it's worth actually, you know, selling the models to someone, or is it better to go and try someone who can, you know, make a mold and just, you know, pop thousands of them for you? So it's a different stage of what you do, and like there's no wrong like doing all of it at once. Like it's fine, you can tap into all of it.
I think too is that if you were to get 1,000 pieces of one object, not every creative person, not every designer, not every person that has the like idea for the product are the greatest at selling that product too. And I feel like for me, that's kind of where I'm at. I could sell your product. I could go into every single bike shop in the entire United States and sell your product without even seeing it. Like my sales skills are so confident, I would be able to do it great. But when it comes to my own products, I have a horrible time selling it because I don't want to come off arrogant, where if it's your products, I don't mind coming off arrogant about your products. And so I need to find someone that can sell my products for me. And that's the hardest part ever. Like,
yeah. No, selling is hard. Yes. Especially like selling your own stuff is, because that's kind of what I'm at too, basically with my stuff. Because it's, you know, you make the stuff, you sell the stuff, you market the stuff, you do the accounting, you do the inventory, you do the, you know, everything. So it's already a lot. So marketing sometimes it just might require kind of like the third party view on what is it you do. Like, to maybe you just get in too much, you so invested in it, you so into it. Like, I mean, I still do my own marketing. Like, it's, I can, you know, come up with cool things here and there, but it will be kind of from my own lens, right? Like, this is my, like, I view, this is what I view, but versus, you know, everything that's over there. So there, I'm sure there's totally different points of view and the points of like how you can sell it. And I haven't explored it yet. I don't know if you have.
No. And I need to, because again, I can, I feel just like you said, like I do all of my own marketing and I do okay. Like I'm at the point that I'm at. I mean, I think we all want to be a little bit busier, but I'm almost to the point where I need to scale into a bigger situation if I'm going to even be able to put out more products. And I also changed my price point this year. So I'm happy with the time that it takes for the price I'm getting paid. Like I feel comfortable. I get to spend, you know, an extra day or two on each project. So, and I'm cool with that. Like, and I'm happy at the end of the day. You know, so many people work at jobs they hate to pay for things that make them happy. And I do already what makes me happy and I make money at it. So then I just need to buy food, clothes, and shelter, and it's all good. I'd rather be doing, if I was working, because I was working when I started Leathercraft, what I did in my free time to make me happy was Leathercraft. And now I get to do it all day, every day.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, yeah, exactly. I think it's, I mean, any of these conversations will always kind of end up at the same kind of level. Like if you talk to people that either make something or, you know, starting companies, it's like, they're not doing it for like, I mean, sure, like you want to make some money along the way, but usually it comes out from, you know, a desire to just make stuff that you like making, you know, like do the work like you want to do. And it's, everything is kind of just will come. I mean, there's nothing wrong like starting something and failing. That's, you know, then you'll just, yeah. And it will be like, well, shit, you know, this didn't work. Like, but that's, you already know that you shouldn't be doing that. So like, it's fine. Like you can just move on and try something else. Like you will eventually find something, you know, this like,
Just because you failed at something also doesn't make you a failure. Failure is when you don't try again, or you don't learn from your one failure and you just throw in the towel and you don't come back from it. I think if you're pushing yourself to a limit, you're going to quote unquote fail multiple times a day because you're doing something new and you're doing something that's pushing yourself. And failure is it's one of the best things that you can do consistently. It's when you fail at a large scale and lose all of your money, that sucks. Or if you fail to the point that you get so down on yourself that you don't get back up, that's scary too, you know?
Yeah. I wouldn't do that. But I've been there, you know, it's nothing wrong being there really. I mean, it's as long as it's, you know, not past that point, like you can get yourself but then you'll just be more prompt to, you know, keep moving, or like, obviously something is not working. Like maybe, you know, maybe just kind of rethink it a little bit and try it from a different angle. Like it's all right, be there. Like it's just not to freak out, you know, like, oh my God, this is the end, that's it. Like,
yeah, it is what it is. Well, Roman, we're going to take a quick break real quick for the ad break. And when we get back, I want to talk about your design work as an artist. I'm super intrigued. This is the part where I really came to get to know you. You have a unique style. And I'm really, really excited to hear more about this side. So when we get back from the break, we're going to hear all of the stuff design oriented for Roman. Okay.
Sweet.
Welcome back, guys. We are talking to Roman today, and we're going to go over his design work and his style of artwork, which I like to think of is, I look at your work and I see a mix of like a Gorillaz music video and Salvador Dali. Have you ever heard those comparisons before?
Interesting. they're both great.
Yeah, it's a compliment. Both of them are a compliment for sure.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, it's an interesting one because it's, you know, like the art stuff has always been like, since I've been doing the design, you know, like I didn't want my art side, I don't like it called that way, but like the desire to draw, you know, like or like make things that are more of a, you know, there's a products and there's art, like they're completely different, like they function completely different, they have different meaning to them, and you can definitely go either side and don't touch, you know, either one if you don't want to, but I wanted to kind of, you know, always integrate them in a way, and then just continue to kind of do just weird little illustrations of the crazy utopian, you know, I don't even know where that comes from. I always enjoyed drawing cars, but I don't want to draw cars, so I start drawing like, you know, I just imagining cars like crazy little campers, and like I just you know, it's, there's plenty of inspiration in the world for that too. Like people make, well, you know, it's the makers that are like go unknown, right? Like if someone went and like made a wooden bumper for their station wagon or something like that.
Even just talking about your artwork, not even seeing it in front of me, makes me giggle and happy, because I think what you said, it's dystopian, but it's also like cute. It's like cute, right? Dystopian. It's cartoony, it's like tragedy almost.
Yeah, exactly. It's a tragedy, not tragedy. It's the kind of common folk view on the world, you know, on like the futuristic world, right? Like yeah, there's, you know, that's why it sometimes ends up in like I have that recent drawing with the SpaceX capsule stuck in the tree with the burned out Tesla, and someone like made a camper out of it, you know, because it's like it's the tech that like doesn't you know, we'll even the point of time when it's like the tech that we have now like basically obsolete in 5 years, right? So you end up with, but you end up with all these like closets full of stuff, you know, like that seemed like so futuristic, but then it's like the hockey stick, just like the graph just, you know, it's just more and more like every year, like there's more of this, like, you know, not, I wouldn't call it a garbage, it's like a residual, right?
Yeah, it's a byproduct of technology moving so quick. And it's almost, it's a byproduct of consumerism and capitalism and constantly having to keep up with modern technology and keep up with your neighbors and have the new iPhone, and then all of a sudden you look into your closet and there's six different iPhone boxes because no one can get rid of their iPhone boxes. I'm that person too. I mean and you do such a good way of illustrating that, and it's clever. It's definitely my kind of artwork. It almost, it doesn't, it's not political in the sense of political, like what most people might think, but it has tones of awareness, I think is the best way of saying it. Like any good art should provoke a feeling. And I think that whether it's love or hate or love and hate within a single piece of artwork.
Yeah, I mean that's what generally art is. I mean it's obviously means different things to everyone, but at least in my view, it's always the subliminal part that's not very straightforward that someone you might see, you might not see it, who knows, but that's not the point. It's point for someone that has something in their head to kind of express it and whatever way that can be, and there's something like also like, weirdly human about this whole, art thing, like from the cave, a little cave drawing still, like it's it sometimes it doesn't really have that much value per se, right? Like it doesn't really teach you anything, but it just makes you, it's like going on a walk, right? Like you, it's changing the way. You're getting something else in your peripheral vision that you haven't seen before. Okay, I think that's probably the best way to describe it, right? It's like it's changing, the patterns that you're used to, right? It might just spark something else in your circuits that hasn't been, like you just changed a couple transistors in there, like, the wiring goes a little bit crazy and usually it's for the good thing. It just makes you, form different thoughts and just view things a little bit different.
I think that that's really actually that's really inspiring, and the way you described it is so good because I can only speak for myself, but I've never been one that was genuinely inspired by artwork that was similar to mine. I've always been inspired by other people's artwork that's completely different than mine. Things that I can't do inspires me more than anything else, and things that are completely different. So I'm heavily inspired by music. I'm heavily inspired by illustration, old folk art, like things that I can take bits and pieces of it, because no matter what kind of art you're doing, you're not the first person to do it. You're being inspired by someone. And like that quote from why am I spacing on his name? Pablo Picasso, he said, good artists steal, great artists copy. And that's the truth, man. We're all copying each other. To think that you originated or I originated anything, you got to be the biggest narcissist ever.
Yeah, the gatekeeping doesn't take you very far.
I'm anti-gatekeeper. If there's anything that pisses me off more than anything,
Exactly.
gatekeepers.
Yeah. So it's you're right, and it doesn't have to be. There are, I mean, all that's why the maker community is so kind of close to, they close together, and they viewed as an artist. I mean, it's basically all the same thing. Look, right? It's makers are just as much artists as people that do canvas. Products. Any handmade. I mean, any product will be handmade at some point, but like the stuff that you make is kind of, it's your art in a way. You put.
If you're creative and you're innovating, you're not just duplicating some, like directly duplicating, then sure, you are an artist at all aspects. I mean, I've been a professional paid artist since I was 16 years old. So that's, I don't want to give away too much, but what is that? That's 22 years I've been paid to be an artist, and I've done things from graffiti to fine art to tattooing to pretty much name it, and I've done it and I've gotten paid, and now doing leathercraft, I feel like I'm justified in saying that I agree with you 110% that making something is a form of artwork. If you're a woodworker, obviously, if you're an illustrator, if you're a designer of products, like product design, like you are as well, you're an artist and you're a problem solver, and you're making something that not only has use but also could be made a million different ways, and you chose to make it the way that you made it.
Yeah, and it comes from the personality standpoint, point, right, too, because it's like the person that makes everyone is different, and then that personality will be different. Whatever is it you do, and it's the once you get many people together that make a product, or I mean, there are collective art pieces that but then you get into the territory like that might start getting lost, because you're becoming more, it's becoming more utilitarian. There's nothing wrong with utilitarian art either. Like, it's, iPhone is a beautiful piece, not art, right? Like, you're not gonna call that an art, right? It can be used to make art and stuff like that. It just goes into a different dimension from there. But and the making community has been like very influential, even like for anything, really. Like, you pick anyone that's like makes anything or just shows you how to make things, they're already kind of introducing a little bit of flair of their own flair, what something that they learn, and it just carries on. It's like it's like this ever evolving university of things that just like snowballing things as it goes along, and you just, I mean, it's sometimes hard to decipher, but it's also kind of a part of the fun. It's finding the angle that you like, looking at things through someone else's eyes, and then you kind of
Sure, taking pieces, little pieces of this and that from people. I think that's what actually makes a good artist. That and like provoking true emotion from people, whether that's, like I said, there's times that I do things and my people within the leather community absolutely hate it because they haven't seen it. And hate usually stems from fear, and fear comes from the unknown, and people will hate it. And I'm okay with them hating it just as much as I'm okay with them loving it. But being impartial or kind of mediocre about it, no artist is trying to achieve mediocrity.
Yeah. I have a t-shirt that says mediocre, but it's a Supreme logo, but instead of Supreme, it says mediocre. I've sold a lot of them, and I got in trouble for.
Oh, you did? Did you get a cease and assist?
No, it was, I think Etsy took it down or something. It was, I mean, they no one can own a red rectangle with the white font. Right.
Supreme's an example of that. They try to sue people from stealing their font when they stole their font, which is ironic, right?
It's literally not anyone's computer. But yeah, it's... It was funny. Speaking of mediocrity.
Yeah, exactly. Speaking of mediocrity. And that's what makes that, that concept of that design with that font, that's the kind of art that I think is clever. Like, it's not that the red box logo is clever. It's what you wrote within that box to mock the company that is mediocre, copying somebody else. Like, the layers of it, to me, being an artist and being aware of like streetwear fashion and the story of Supreme, to me, that's what makes me like it so much. The average person walking down the street is going to be like, oh, it's a shirt that says mediocrity, but me knowing the story of Supreme makes it awesome.
Yeah, and it's a great company. I have nothing. It was just something in my head. It wasn't even that elaborate. I was just like, oh, that's gonna, I just thought it's gonna be funny. That's all it is. Like, that's, yeah.
And that's what it is. It's funny. It's really funny.
Yeah.
Hey, Roman. So, you're in the process of scaling up. And I think that the majority of this podcast, the podcast audience, are kind of transitioning from the weekend warrior kind of craft in whatever field that they're in, into trying to graduate into making some money. If not, they're making money trying to go full time, or they're full time trying to scale up like I am. And you're in the process of that. And I feel like you have the ability to add a lot of value to the conversation because you're living it right now. And I was just interested if you could share some of the growing pains of scaling up and some of the mistakes that you've made and some of the victories that you've had that you might be able to share with us in the audience.
It's hard. it's hard in the sense of like what, you know, you have to define what is it you're scaling up, like, or how do you want to, I mean, if you're talking about just like, you're done with your job and you just want to, you know, you just want to do this, which is fine, but it, you know, just take calculated risks, or don't. It's good to have like a little, you know, come up with some sort of cushion that you can rely on. Like, don't be completely stupid about it, you know, like, unless you're 100% sure that this is just gonna blow up. And
no one's 100% sure, though. We all know that.
Yeah,
there's no way you can be 100% sure.
Some people want to set goals and like, you will try to think of like, oh, when do I make first $10,000, right? I never really done that. I just wanted to make the best product I can make, and I know if I do that, I will eventually make that first $10,000, right? There was no like, oh, I'm going to forecast the next month or whatever. Like, are you sure? So some accounting here and there helps, like just keep track of stuff you're spending and, you know, don't go crazy, but like constantly thinking about that, like the one, because you're already doing basically everything, right? Like, unless you have help from elsewhere, you're already going to be doing
everything.
You're doing everything. Right. So you've already been doing a lot of stuff. So like, try to, you know, be reasonable with, you know, setting expectations and things like that, but like concentrate on putting the majority of the energy into, you know, actually making the stuff and like enjoying the process and all that stuff. Everything else will come. Like, just take it. And then, like, same goes with the scaling up. You know, like, there's not a button you just press and like, oh, you look at the dashboard and all the needles start going to the right and like graphs start stacking up and, you know, all of a sudden you're in a meeting room with 20 other people. That's
not how it goes.
That's scrolling Facebook. Yeah. So that's not real. I mean, if that's your goal, sure, that's fine too. And like, I've been a part of like startups and successful companies that like build from basically, you know, five smelly dudes in a little office to like a, you know, a company that's like very successful. And and it's all like any of these things, like you just learn through every single process and kind of, you know, take bits and pieces of different aspects. And I'm just trying to approach it from the same standpoint of view. It's kind of like, okay, like, what is that next step? Like, what is it you're trying to do? Like, you know, not obviously, maybe are you trying to sell more products? You know,
I think it's really interesting what you said too, you have to take calculated risks, and you also need to, you know, part of this calculated risk are taking a risk, and no matter how calculated it is a risk. What I told myself when I switched from, you know, I was very fortunate where I could kind of ease my way out of my previous job to like 4 days to 3 days to 2 days. So I had a little bit of cushion and I could start prepping myself. And I just set, you know, I set a goal, and it was a lot more narrow than like even a yearly goal or a monthly goal. Like, hey, this is how much money I need to make a week to live in my comfort zone. If that's a comfort zone, you still don't achieve it, but you end up making it work, because desperation is a huge motivator. And when you have to get things done, the universe or God or whatever you believe in or you don't believe in, it doesn't matter, it gets taken care of. And I think if anything that we've learned from the pandemic is everything could be taken away from you in a moment's notice. I mean, so many people passed away. So many people lost their job, and so many things happen. Like, at the end of the day, you're only given so many years to be on this floating rock. Like, make the most of it. And the truth is, right now, it's the employees market. we could all go back to our old jobs and get our jobs back in our collective field. Like, you really do, you know, you talk to an old boomer and they're telling you security, 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 stick to a job, work for the county and stay there for your whole life and retire. But that's not what happens for our generation. You don't retire from a company you work for 40 years. Think about a company that has, you know, that's even been around for 40 years. People don't, like, companies come and go so much faster. So I think it's more important to find something that you truly, truly love. And if it doesn't work out, go get another shit job that you had before that you hated. Work there until you get another opportunity to try to start your own business again.
Yeah. Or start, you know, like, I always been a opponent of like finding like-minded people and just starting a new business. Like, people are always so scared about that. Like, it's like, oh, you're gonna, you know, have to have a bunch of money up front. And like, but literally, like, it doesn't really, it's so easy. I mean, you obviously have to think right to do that stuff, but like, starting business is not hard. And like, you have all the resources that you basically need. I think, what is it, like $200 to open LLC or something? You know, starting bank account and like, you know, getting an address and like making a little website and kind of go from there. You know, like, it depends what you do, of course. Like, it's not, trying new business, like you were saying, like, you can always go back to where you were. Like, take a 2 month sabbatical and you know, try doing it, see, maybe you're gonna hate it, you know. Like,
you know, I think that there's some people that have that are built to be entrepreneurs and business owners, and I think that there's people that aren't. My older sister, every time, you know, for as long as I've been a, you know, could even think or remember, I've always wanted to own my own business, because I resent making money for other people, in the sense of like the corporate world where we work and we're expected to, you know, create 3 times our pay for the company. I've always hated that. But my sister, on the other hand, doesn't want to think about work when she leaves. You know what I mean? She wants to just show up, clock in, clock out, and that's it. And
it's not for everyone now. Yeah, I think we're trying to say this is for everyone. If you already have a business, you know, you in scaling up could be not for everyone either. You know, like, it's you are where you know, you are where you are. Like, that's obviously, you sort of got there somehow, right? But it's all not always, you don't have to stay where you are. That, I think that's the main point we're trying to make, right? It's like
and I don't want to give the impression that I don't think either of us are saying like, hey, risk it all and do whatever it takes, because some people have kids. Like, gauge your responsibility, gauge your overhead. Like, if you live in you know, a $10,000 home that you got to come up with that nut every month for, and you have 6 cars and you all of these things, and you want to just go into starting a small leather crafts business, don't do it. But in order to get to that position in life where you have a home and cars like that, you probably make semi-decent decisions, and you probably you've calculated a little bit.
Yeah, and it's you know, you can use the wherever you add as an investment into whatever else you're gonna do. You know, slowly start pulling money inside from it if you can, and maybe, you know, start learning new equipment that you wanted to learn. It doesn't have to always have to become a business. You know, it's not, maybe it's fine, and it's like, you know, like, I just do things that I always kind of had in my head stashed somewhere. Like, I wanted to get there. Like, right now, like, you know, I learning 3D printing, basically. Well, I want to say, like, I already learned a lot. Obviously, I can make, you know, like, I can make little things and pieces. Like, it's cool. Like, and I like learning new things and getting, you know, getting a new machine and trying to figure out, oh, what can it do? Like, or is there some, you know, a different technology I should learn? But that's just how my mind works. Maybe, you know, if you just comfortable with a little chisel, and that's all you want to use, that's cool too. Like that's there's a place for anything like that.
That's an important point that you made too, that you don't have to start a business after every passion. Sometimes that almost jades things because there's a lot of pressure that it's put on you. Maybe being an illustrator is something that you just like doing. Maybe you got an iPad and you like drawing on Procreate, or you got a little leather set, or you got a couple woodworking tools, or like you said, a chisel and hammer, and you just do it because it's a stress relief or something that you, that's a pastime, and you don't want to make it a business because making it a business makes it different. It's like maybe it's a relationship. The first, 6 months are just everything's perfect and the other person has no flaws in them. And then 10 years down the road, you're married with 3 kids and you're sick of each other, you know?
This is the point where we going to start selling our course.
yeah, that's funny. That's totally the truth, man. Hey, Roman, I am super grateful. Thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast. I appreciate it. Time is the most valuable thing that we have. Like I said, I've been a fan of yours for a very long time. You're one of my favorite artists. It's really exciting to see the other side of you, the mechanical creativity. And it's so like, I can't wait to see that side, flourish. And I just hope you, from the purest place in my heart, just continued success. And, you know, your optimism and your laid back style and your, take it as it comes kind of attitude is super, super inspiring to me. And I needed this conversation today. So thank you for being a friend, man. And thank you for just being good at what you do, inspiring others.
Thanks to you, Dennis. That's been I like these conversations. It's a maker therapy in a way.
It is. Not everyone knows what we go through. And I feel even with our like spouses, our partners or whatever, there's only so much you can talk to them about that they understand. And sometimes they don't want to hear you, and that's okay too. So having like-minded people that go through, I mean, you and I do completely different things, but at the same time, we get each other. We understand each other. There's a common language between us. And, I really get so much out of the maker community. And that's the reason why I wanted to start this podcast. It's not just the leather community. It's not just the woodworking. It's illustrators. It's mechanical engineers. It's people that are thinking out of the box and at every different level, and it makes me excited.
Big props for you two starting, because it's a I had those thoughts before too, like there's gonna be another maker podcast, and it's like I think it's like why not, shouldn't be there another maker podcast, why not? There's a lot of different makers. They can't be all, if there was just one maker podcast, there's so many other makers. How would you hear about them?
And those people deserve to be heard too. That's the thing, is I want to bring on people that aren't, that don't have 10 million followers on YouTube or Instagram, the people at every different, level, the people that are just getting, I want to get like makers that come on that are just getting into their craft, that can maybe bring us, like teach us to fall in love with the craft again and see their excitement, to people that are old. My grandpa's going to be on the podcast too, and he's 84 years old and he's all grizzled, and like, talk about advice that has nothing to do with the mechanics of what we do, how we put things together with, but how to treat others, how to make time for our families, how to not get burnt out on work, how to, the things that we can't get from people our own age group. So I hope that this takes off, because it takes a lot of work, and it's a labor of passion, but I'm doing it for the audience. I get nothing out of it. You get nothing out of it except an awesome conversation that you and I get to have. But there isn't millions and millions of listeners. Your sales aren't going to go up overnight from being on this podcast. That's not what this is about.
That's not the point. No, and it's like, yeah, I don't think it's anytime you go do this kind of stuff, like I said, for me, it's more of like it's a therapeutic experience in a way, right? You get to talk to like-minded people, like maybe during the conversation, you'll open some insights that you didn't know you had, you know, or just again, in the inspiration part, and like you were saying, kind of get that drive, that keep that going, because you know, all of us get into the weeds. You know, I do get in the weeds sometimes, and you'll be like, oh, you know, you're trying to push through some stuff, but then you'll kind of reignite that feeling, like of, you know, you are enjoying this, you know, like not trying to say it like, oh, remember, you enjoying this, you must enjoy this.
No, that's like never the case. Yeah.
Yeah, it just becomes more of like, oh, maybe like this was this other project that I thought about, maybe I'll just tackle this instead. And like you have the ability to kind of switch from one thing to another and pause. And majority of the time, once you pause something and you know, just step away from it, you're coming back to it to a like completely different like mindset, right? Like you, like it's just like a reset, like super easy reset button, and like and it works pretty much every time.
I agree with you, and I think one of the things that what I've realized in the time of, you know, the previous podcast and now this podcast is what I feel like I get out of it, and the actual guests that are on the podcast get out of it, is very human in the sense that they get to feel heard. And that's important for all people, is to feel like you've been heard. And then for the listeners to realize they're not alone. If you tune into any of these podcasts, you as a listener, you can put yourself into each one of the guest situations. You're established. You've been doing this a while. I'm established. I do this full time. Like, we're in these positions, and these people that are just getting in the craft that come across struggles might be like, oh, there's people at Roman's level that are still having issues that I do. Like, I'm not alone. Like, this is expected. Like, maybe they ease up on the pressure that they put on themselves and realize, hey, like, you know, they're not that much different than me. We're all the same. Like, it's not untenable. And then also,
it's okay to take a day off on Wednesday, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it Wednesday? I never know what day it is.
Oh, no, it's Thursday. It's Thursday.
Every day is Saturdays and Mondays for me.
Yeah, exactly.
I get what you're saying. Take a day off in the middle of the week just because sometimes. Yeah. And if you want to work a Sunday, work a Sunday. If you don't want to, take time to go have lunch with your spouse, or take your kid to the park in the middle of the day, or go visit an old friend that lives two towns away. Like, you need those things, because real quickly before we run, what I've realized and what goes on in my head often is that I feel like I'm being judged by my peers or my family members or my friends that I went to high school with, that I'm not working hard enough. I'm never working hard enough. I could work this last, I did 14 weeks, or I'm sorry, 14 days, 2 weeks straight, no days off. And I still don't feel like that's enough, but who cares what they think anyways? Like, who cares? Like, just do what makes you happy.
Yeah, you can't earn all the money.
No, not at all. And is that really what the goal is? If your goal is to earn all of the money, get into the corporate side of whatever it is that you're doing, but you're not going to have as much fun. You're not working with your hands. You're never going to be a millionaire, or you could be a millionaire, but you're not.
You can, it doesn't mean you can't make, I mean, there's a lot of successful makers, you know, like that's it's totally achievable. Like, it depends what, you know, again, yours, I don't like word goals, but like what is it your aspirations are, you know, like, what is it? What's the ultimate kind of like, what it's like, you know, it's like with anything, just kind of close your eyes and like, what is it you're picturing? Like, what is it you doing? You know, what is it you wanted to do? Like, how do you see, where are you at? Like, are you working in the garage, like, you know, with, you know, cutting something in table saw, or are you sitting in the office with a computer? Like, and you know, there are snacks at the kitchen. Like, it's fine either way. Like, it doesn't, it's just what is it you're, you know, like, if you would, get to pick, you know, when you go to, you know, when you get a console game, like when you build a little character or whatever, like, what is it, that character? What's the game? What's the, you know, what are you wearing in that game? Or like, what world are you choosing?
I'm hiring you to draw that character for me because your characters are awesome. I think, no. I totally think that's super important that people realize that both of those characters are needed. The person that's working in their garage with the saw equally, and as the guy sitting at the computer, and the guy at the computer is equal to the guy that's working on the saw. You can't have one without the other. You can't just have entrepreneurs because everyone would have a business and no one would be able to buy from each other. There's different roles that people want to play and should play. So, but anyways, Roman, I appreciate you. Thank you for coming on. Will you come on? What's that?
You've gotten so many tangents.
That's the idea of this. I should rename the podcast Going on Tangents. Maybe I'll start a second one. You know, I'll just be full-time podcaster. I already feel like I am, man. It's a lot of work, but, will you come on in a couple months to catch up with you and see how things are going?
Of course.
Awesome. I appreciate you. You're my friend. And, like I said, I wish you continued success. And before we go, can you plug yourself? Can you tell people where they can find you on Instagram, if you have a YouTube, TikTok, all of the social networks, your website, your OnlyFans, whatever?
Oh, man. Honestly, everything is at sepandbark.com. Like, you can probably find everything from there. The Ikari is on there, the actual illustrations and funny t-shirts and all that stuff is on there. I mean artwork. Personal site, I have my personal site, but there's nothing interesting there. I would rather have people look. That's from, like, you know, like, that's something I would show to an employer or something. That's boring. But it's my last name, rusinov.ro. That's my personal site. Same thing for the Instagram. It's at rusinov.ro, I think, or underscore ro, something.
It is. That's weird, because that's how I know you on there.
Okay, cool. Yeah,
that's where we've linked up is through that. So I'll get in contact with you and find out where you want me to send people through the description, because I always add that whenever I post these. So
perfect. Yeah, I'm sure that it's probably easier than spelling those things out.
Cool, man. Cool. Well, I appreciate you, and thanks for coming on, brother. Thank you guys for tuning in to this week's Wake and Make podcast. If you haven't yet, please subscribe. Hit the like button, share it with a friend, leave a comment, all of those things that we're supposed to tell you to do. If you're getting any value out of this, please just share it with one or 27 of your friends. No big whoop, you know? And we'll continue making them. Until next time, have a great week. See ya.
Way back a year ago.